Some people have been loving working from home and some people have been hating it. I think it depends in part if you have children underfoot in some ways. But it is clear that our work relationships have not been the same as they were before the pandemic. And we're headed to this emergence phase. There is light at the end of the tunnel, but there is also going to be a hybrid world in which how those relationships continue to be built certainly look different than they did a couple of years ago. So how do you navigate all that? Kimberly B. Cummings is our guest. She is the author of a new book called Next Move, Best Move, Transitioning into a Career You Love. Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
There are so many, I love the title of your book. There's so many different ways we could go. I do want to focus, at least at the first point here, on what virtual networking will look like, what it could look like now that this is the way we're going to be for a period of time.
Virtual networking is beyond a hot topic because as I talk to professionals, when COVID hit, they're just like, well, I guess I can't network. We're going to just figure it out when the world opens back up. But now, as we know, it's most likely going to be hybrid. One of the things I tell my clients to do is when you're at a virtual event, when you are out and about in the virtual streets and all the events and new things that are happening, or even at your company, the goal is just to find one connection. That is it. Just find one. And the way that I like to do it is by monitoring the chat and all these virtual events. And I try and pick someone, not a speaker, someone in the chat who is highly interactive. And I follow up, I send them a note, ask them for their LinkedIn and see if we can hop on 15 minutes just to continue the conversation about the event.
And why do you choose someone who's highly active?
Because when you're in that virtual world, let's say an event has, like for my book tour, I have hundreds of people for the event that I have this afternoon. You don't want to pick someone random and just hope for the best. But if someone is already engaging in a conversation, generally that showcases that they're ready to continue the conversation or at least engage in that conversation. If you're engaged, you have something in common.
Every great networking conversation has some give and some get. So you want to get something, like maybe they work at a company you want to work at one day. How do you think about the give? How do you think about balancing that relationship, if not in that first LinkedIn request, then over time?
So my goal is to make sure that I almost forget the get for a little bit. Mm. You don't, because the get can make you anxious. That's what makes networking feel so icky to some folks. When it comes to the give, I instruct everyone to ask a lot of questions. People generally like to talk about themselves. So continuously ask questions, go deeper, ask why they do the things they do. Where do they live? How did they get there? Figure out as much about them as possible so you can figure out a give before you start thinking about the get.
I am feeling very proud of myself that just today I was on an event and I sent a LinkedIn message related to, this was a panelist, but it was related to what she was talking about. She replied immediately and I feel like she's in my LinkedIn network. Awesome. Yeah. How do you then cultivate that? Because those of us who've been around for a long time, our LinkedIn network can get quite large and you don't want to forget about it because then you're going to need to go to the get and you realize I haven't given any give and now I've got the icky part happening again.
Yeah. So when someone on LinkedIn, like you said, LinkedIn is the worldwide web of professional connections. It's everyone is on there. So I always recommend asking for 15 minutes and be persistent. Not everyone checks their LinkedIn messages at the same rate as everyone else. I check mine like email, which is daily, sometimes multiple times a day. That's not the case for everyone. So make sure that if you can't interact with their content, if they're posting or publishing on LinkedIn, to kind of make sure your name looks familiar. When you're looking at the message, see if you can follow up a few times if you don't hear back initially, but try to interact with them in a natural way before kind of taking it offline into a conversation.
And then what does that 15 minutes look like? So you and I, we set it up, here we go. We compliment each other on the great shirts we have chosen for our LinkedIn meeting, which listeners, by the way, she's got an extraordinary yellow top on right now. What does that conversation look like?
Structure your questions. That's the first tip I always give. Don't go in there just expecting a stroke of genius to happen. No, make sure you do your research on the individual. And I always recommend planning at least 3 to 5 key questions that you need answers to that will give you the information to help you figure out what your get could be.
What are some examples of those questions?
So I think the simple one, the low-hanging fruit, is asking them about how they got to where they are. But not just how did you get to where you are, but how did XYZ job help prepare you for this job? What is the most challenging piece of your work every single day? If you weren't doing this right here, what is it that you would be doing? What do you believe is the next step for you in your career? If someone like me were interested in moving into your type of role, what advice would you give me that you wish you had known when you were in a career similar to mine?
I love the question. I'd love being asked for advice. I could spend as much time giving people advice as I could watching Netflix. Yeah. It's like a full-on hobby. I think everybody should just do what I say all the time. That would be delightful.
To make the world better, I'm sure.
Totally. Just do what I say. You have 4 pillars for your network: peers, coaches, mm-hmm. mentors, and sponsors. Peers, yeah. I get. Like, that's people, yeah. you know, we were colleagues in the same cohort early in my career, whatever. Tell me one sentence about the other 3.
Let me break it down. So teachers are the people who can actually teach you something in a safe environment in the workplace. So you don't know how to make a pivot table and you need it for a presentation, you find a teacher who can help you build that skill. Mentors are the folks who've been there, done that, and can give you that tactical day-to-day feedback to help you navigate the world of work. Sponsors are that special sauce. Those are the folks who are in more senior level positions who can pick you up from where you are to bring you to where you'd like to be. Now, people generally ask me next is, can a mentor be a sponsor, and sponsor can be a mentor? A sponsor can also be a mentor, but not every mentor can be a sponsor because you really need that senior level power.
Interesting. How do you find the power players in every work environment? How does that work?
Every industry has them. The quickest way that I think about doing it, when you're at work and you propose a new idea, who's the person who has to approve it? Who's the last person who puts that stamp of approval? When you look at conferences and online events, who is that person who's always on stage? Who has the keynote? Who's serving on the panels? You want to find the folks who generally make that final decision or people always want to hear from.
You come to this networking topic with a background in diversity and inclusion.
Yeah.
How does that manifest? How does that alter the process? Because we know, this is empirically, we know that same seeks same. And in order to interrupt some of the power dynamics and the old boys club and all that stuff, mm-hmm. we need to be going outside of the sandboxes that we have known. This is for the people at the entering their careers. It is for the mentors and for the sponsors as well. How do we make that happen? How do we make it more than just words?
That is such a heavy question. I think we need 20 more minutes, but
yes.
Let me give you the 2-second answer. So the reason I wrote the book is because I want to put the power back in the hands of the individual. So many times we think about the larger systemic issues, things that are innate to how a culture has been brought. But the book is helping people advocate for themselves and position themselves as leaders in the workplace, regardless of who they are. But from a organization perspective, it's having the conversations that you just asked me right now. It's digging deeper into the microaggressions that happen every day, the bias that happens every single day, figuring out what are specific to those organizations and truly creating an actionable plan and acting it out. I think it's one thing to be slammed in the news about XYZ, but the organizations, more things happen after you donate to Black Lives Matter and Stop Asian Hate. Mm. The actions have to happen after that.
And I think the call to action, I am a white dude. I am mid-career. I have a lot of networks and a lot of relationships. And I take it personally, I have it on my to-do list to ensure that I'm mentoring and supporting people who don't have the same background as I do, who don't look the same as I do. What is the call to action for people like me? Because unfortunately, we're still in the majority. And in order to make systemic change, we got to be doing stuff differently.
So one of those things I like to call, I call that intersectional allyship. Like you're looking to really find people who are different with intersectional identities who you can support. So one, I look at the places that you naturally give right now. Where do you give? Where do you give back? Where do you volunteer? What are you interested in? And see how you can begin to diversify those networks and even diversify any problems that you have. How can you get diverse perspectives in your everyday work? We never want someone to kind of create a brand new tour for themselves and kind of champion all these things they've never done before. The first step I always say is looking at your existing network, the existing things that you do every single day, and try to diversify who you're interacting with and get diverse points of view.
Really helpful stuff. Kimberly, thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. Thanks again for having me.
Kimberly B. Cummings is the author of Next Move, Best Move, Transitioning into a Career You'll Love. She joined us from Newark, New Jersey today. And one of the things was on networking in this virtual environment, but also how do we get better as mentors and sponsors of people from backgrounds different than our own?